the music producer for, oh, we're going to have one more bow. I bet I know who it is. There's Susan Stroman, 5-time Tony Award winner. This is her production, her Met debut, out there with her cast on this HD broadcast, Taking a Bow. The music producer for this Metropolitan Opera broadcast is J. David Sachs. The operations directors, John Kurzweil, Ed Hartley, and Robert Hewitt are our broadcast engineers. I'm senior radio producer Mary Jo Heath, in for host Margaret Junkway. Our senior editor is Ellen Keel. The producer is William Berger. Associate producer is Lee Ellen Vim. Our line producer today is Lauren Tulajian. And we have production assistants from Yolanda Williams, Michael Griebel, Geza Kudlock, and Elizabeth Svokos. Broadcast manager, stage manager is Laurie Squire. Our executive producers are Mia Bongiovanni and Elena Park. You can hear the cast whooping backstage. The Metropolitan Opera's music director is James Levine. The principal conductor is Fabio Luisi. And the general manager is Peter Gell.
And thanks to Mary Jo Heath and Ira Siff presenting Opera on 3 live from New York tonight. The Metropolitan Opera broadcast season is supported by Toll Brothers, the Annenberg Foundation, the Neubauer Family Foundation, and the Vincent A. Stabile Endowment for Broadcast Media. And it's broadcast over here through an arrangement with the European Broadcasting Union. And of course, I should say best wishes to Margaret Juntwaite for a speedy recovery. As ever, if you're not around for these broadcasts on Saturday evenings, Met relays are available for you to listen to again via the BBC Radio 3 website for 30 days. That also goes for all of our other concerts and opera broadcasts. And speaking of that, you've still time to catch up with one from the end of last month if you missed Wagner's Tristan and Isolde, which we broadcast a few days after Christmas, recorded at the Royal Opera House, Covent Garden. Well, that's still available via the BBC Radio 3 website for about another 10 days or so. It's a wonderful cast. It's got rave reviews, led by the soprano Nina Stemmer as Isolde and the tenor Stephen Gould as Tristan, with Antonio Pappano conducting. As I say, you'll find that on the BBC Radio 3 website. It was broadcast on the 29th of December if you want to search for it by date. Well, there's no opera broadcast next Saturday evening, but we do have more opera here on Radio 3 this coming Thursday.
Afternoon on 3 presents a masterpiece of 20th century opera, Alban Berg's Wozzeck. It's a story which still resonates almost a century after it was written. Scarred by war, the troubled soldier Wozzeck finds his relationship with Marie too much to bear, and his jealousy becomes all-consuming, with tragic consequences. Baritone Thomas Meyer is Wozzeck, with Elena Zhidkova singing the role of Marie, and the score is brought to life by this week's featured orchestra, the BBC Scottish Symphony, conducted by Donald Runicles. Dark, fragile, and hauntingly melodic, Alban Berg's Wozzeck is the opera matinee in Afternoon on 3 with me, Katie Derham, this Thursday afternoon from 2 o'clock here on BBC Radio 3.
Well, back to this Saturday evening on BBC Radio 3. In an hour's time, Ivan Hewitt presents our weekly new music programme, Here and Now. That's at 10 o'clock. Now, though, just after 9 o'clock, and it's time for this week's Jazz Lineup, presented by Julian Joseph.
Hello. On today's show, a special South African-themed programme. And who better to help me set up my musical store than piano maestro Abdullah Ibrahim with African Marketplace. Abdullah Ibrahim's African Marketplace, and he was accompanied by the Munich Radio Symphony, and the perfect piece of music for today's South African themed show. On today's programme, I'll be joined later by saxophonist Shabaka Hutchings, and together we'll be navigating through an assortment of South African jazz sounds from the past to the present. Plus, tonight's concert set highlights features a set paying tribute to the legendary South African group The Blue Notes, led by our special guest Shabaka Hutchings. Here's a taster. Flavour of the 2014 incarnation of the Blue Notes, and more from that concert set later on the programme. First up, music from brilliant South African pianist and composer Bheki Mseleku, who set up home in the UK and contributed greatly to the local and international jazz scene from the early 80s for several decades until his untimely death a few years ago. From his 1994 album Timelessness, this is Vukani. Thank you. The sound of the now legendary pianist Becky Mseleko, who's also on vocals and saxophone, from his album Timelessness, which features Marvin Smitty-Smith on drums and Michael Bowie on the bass. Timelessness came out in 1994 on the Verve record label. At last year's London Jazz Festival, many of the venues featured jazz from South Africa. On the jazz lineup stage, we featured a musical tribute to the celebrated South African sextet, the Blue Notes, whose definitive lineup featured Chris McGregor on piano, Mongezi Fazer on trumpet, Duda Pukwana on alto saxophone, Nikile Moyaki on tenor saxophone, Johnny Diani on the bass, and Louis Maholo Maholo on the drums. The majority of these artists, and others such as Julian Bahula, Mervyn Africa, Ernest Motley, Becky Mseleku, and many more, sought refuge and political asylum in Britain to escape the tyranny and injustice of the apartheid system. Their exile enriched the music in their new home, making a huge impact on the British jazz scene, influencing and nurturing some of our most important jazz musicians. Now, an indelible flavour and component in the DNA of what it means to be a jazz musician in the UK, a new generation are forming their own relationship with this legacy. One such artist is former BBC Radio 3 new generation jazz artist Shebaka Hutchings, who was the musical director for the tribute to the legendary Blue Notes that took place on the jazz lineup stage. But before I speak with Shebaka, let's listen to a flavour of a piece by the original Blue Notes called We and Duna. We and Duna from the Blue Notes, and it's my pleasure to welcome saxophonist and composer Shebaka Hutchings, the musical director for tonight's special concert set celebrating the sound and legacy of the Blue Notes. And the group you have, Shebaka, is made up of musicians from South Africa and the UK, and it was recorded at last year's London Jazz Festival.
Yeah, it's really a great privilege to be able to actually put this performance on. It really felt like we were continuing the legacy that the Blue Notes gave us in combining musicians from South Africa and musicians from the UK. It's a tradition that, you know, kind of was solidified in the Brotherhood of Breath, and I think it's a really important thing to continue today.
Well, today's show, Shebaka, has a special South African theme running through it, and you've chosen three tracks that you feel reflect important landmarks in South African jazz from the past to the current scene, and it's obvious that you're very much aware of its impact in this country. Talk about We and Duna, which we just heard from the Blue Notes.
We and Duna really represents an element of the Blue Notes' contribution to the world of jazz and where jazz can be taken. how far it can be pushed when introduced to other cultures. You know, that kind of mixture of free improvisation, that mixture of groove and kind of band interplay, it really fascinates me. And the element of just energy that they bring to the music is a very different energy than you get in English-based or American-based jazz. It's a very particular kind of intensity that's really relentless from the start of the track to the end. And that's not to say that the track doesn't have dynamics, but the dynamics start from a point of, you know, really kind of hysterical energy.
Well, it's interesting that that the energy and that sense of expression is something that seems to attract the expressors of jazz music. And if you look at bebop, it was before this era, because the Blue Notes, they left South Africa by 1964. Mm. And they had all gone to different countries and basically settled in Europe. There was a sense of a need to express a certain kind of freedom. Bebop went in part to that. Then, as the music was developing and going through various transformations and transitions, the idea of free music started to enter the frame towards the end of the 50s into the 1960s. And in South Africa, they not only picked up that element, but they also have their own unique quality, which you were alluding to, this South Africanness.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of represents for me the whole, you know, trajectory of the development of jazz, whereas players from any part of the world, you don't simply listen to jazz and decide, okay, I'm just going to copy it note for note. Mm-hmm. You really emphasize the elements of the music that you feel represent you on a personal basis, mm-hmm. or you on a cultural basis, mm-hmm. and you emphasize those elements, and that's how the music progresses.
Yeah.
And for me, it feels like the Blue Notes kind of, they went through bebop, they understood that language, and they picked up on the intensity that's kind of hovering below the surface. Mm-hmm. But instead of, as the bebop musicians, they had to prove themselves in a certain period in history as being on par to the classical lineage. So in some ways, they were still presenting themselves within the context of a classical orientated system. Sure. Whereas the Blue Notes, it felt like we're going to take these lessons, this vocabulary of bebop, but we don't have to present ourselves within the gaze of the classical canon. We can just take what elements we like from that music, and we're going to give it to you as hard as we think we can.
And it also transforms through their culture, because I think many of the considerations that you go through when you're learning to play, as you would know, you just want to be able to play. Then somehow the energy of your own culture starts to seep through. And also because there's so many parallels between the apartheid system and the social injustice that was going on in America, both at that time and previously, the parallels and the kind of energy that they were using, that force to express themselves through this music.
Yeah, I mean, it also goes into the area of what the expression of music is for,
right?
Like the use of music.
Yeah.
You know, are you just performing music for the sake of saying I can do this, or are you performing music for the purpose of, you know, a social function, or for the purpose of transmitting into historical memory what you've seen in your life,
right?
Which, if it's, you know, in the case of people that are about to go into exile or who have recently come into exile, is a life of hardship and a life of strain, and they're kind of presenting all the energy, all the kind of tumultuous forces in that expression.
Well, you mentioned Brotherhood of Breath and its impact on, certainly on British jazz, stylistically, on the players. Many players were nurtured through people like Chris McGregor and Dudu Pakwana, including Django Bates, Eddie Parker. Many of the guys who actually play in Loose Tubes came through being heavily influenced by the South African expression and vocabulary of jazz. What's your experience of that?
Well, I mean, talking to a lot of players that I've come into contact with over the years, the main thing that I get from when the Blue Notes first came over and formed Brotherhood of Breath is the fact that energy is infectious.
Yeah,
that you couldn't help, if you were in the room with those guys playing with them on the bandstand, you couldn't help be influenced by the amount, the force of their contribution to the music, mm-hmm. you know, and that just real kind of single-minded devotion to really pushing the boundaries of what's accepted in terms of how much one can give to the music that you're performing.
Well, the next track that you've chosen, Chewbacca, combines a number of textures. The harp, reminiscent of Alice Coltrane, Coltrane's influence with the McCoy Tyner-esque comping on the piano, and also the use of voices that remind me of some of Becky M. Seleku's innovations. And the artist is called Zim Nkwana. It's called Kubi. Why did you choose this track?
I chose this track because it just represents everything about South African jazz that really brings me in. Mm-hmm. That real sense of expansiveness, the real sense of strength. That's the thing I really love about South African jazz. You've got a feeling of boldness, of someone saying, here, this is, you know, not in a kind of, I'm just going to kick the door ring for the sake of being loud, you know, wave my hands in the air.
Yeah.
Just a sense of pride. It's the thing that I kind of get in this music. And it's the thing that I get in even players from the younger generation that have a real strong connection to their kind of South African jazz heritage. Mm-hmm. That sense of real pride, pride rhythmically, pride harmonically, in what, you know, their music is expressing.
Ayo yo yo, madoda kwenze njani? Ayo yo yo. Ayo yo yo, mata da wenzi.
Ayo yo yo, mata da wenzi.
Ubone se nubote wenzi. Ubone se nubote wenzi.
Zim Nkwana and Kubi, a very hypnotic sound and a beautiful choice there. Chewbacca Hutchings is my special guest on this show that's focusing on the great jazz music that comes out of South Africa. And you've spent time in South Africa, Chewbacca. And I remember you calling me actually from there, telling me how excited you were about some of the players.
Yeah.
Can you just give our listeners a sense of some of the people you've seen, some of the places you've been to? And I know that a particular pianist caught your ear, and that has quite an important resonance in why we're talking today.
Yeah, well, I first went to South Africa in 2008. I played in a festival called Pan African Space Station, mm-hmm. organized by a group called Chimurenga, who they own a venue that I've done lots of performances in called Tagore's in Cape Town. Mm-hmm. And they also produce a literary magazine, a kind of broadsheet dealing on Pan-African issues, inviting the best kind of writers on music and arts and just kind of political issues in general to contribute towards it. Mm-hmm. So that's when I first got introduced to the kind of scene in South Africa and mm-hmm. introduced to lots of players. Going back there a couple of years ago, now I've kind of been there a couple of times a year for maybe 2-3 months at a time mm-hmm. for the last few years. It's just incredible. Every time I go there, there's more players that keep popping up fully, you know, not fully formed, but they've been putting in loads of work. Right. But you see them and you think, why has no one actually heard of these guys? Obviously, Bokani, who I played with in the Blue Notes tribute, mm-hmm. Bokani Dyer. There's also Carl Shepherd, who's an amazing pianist who performs a lot in Switzerland and Germany. There's players like Buddy Wells, Mandla Mangeni, Tumi Mogorossi, who's done a fantastic album recently combining the South African opera tradition mm-hmm. with jazz. Mm-hmm. I recently played with him at Transmusicale Festival in Rennes.
So there's this sense of excitement, there's this sense of a scene burgeoning. It seems there's a lot of opportunities, not only creatively, but I think for reinvigorating the music with their sound, with the progression of the South African sound in jazz.
Yeah, I think one of the aspects of the age that we live in that's really influenced the kind of players over there is just the access to information.
Right.
Well, you can see it as a blessing or a curse, I guess, whichever viewpoint you're from. You know, young players now have access to the educational facilities, mm-hmm. you know, via the internet
yep.
that weren't necessarily available 40, 50 years ago. And that's meaning you get a lot more players that you hear from and you think these are world-class standard players mm-hmm. at a lot younger age mm-hmm. than you might have had a few years back. And it's incredible to see.
So more technically accomplished.
More younger. Technically accomplished, but also they are still a part of the lineage that they're coming from.
Sure.
So you're getting these kind of technically accomplished players, or conceptually accomplished, rather.
Okay.
But you can hear that they're definitely coming from a specific place mm-hmm. musically. And that place has roots. That's not the kind of standard my roots are in America. It's right. like my roots are in South Africa and in South African jazz. And that has roots in America.
Mm.
It's like the tree has actually spread. It's not like I'm just going to borrow from their tree or, mm-hmm. you know. Mm. It's a real sense of cross-pollination.
Yeah. Well, I think that's an important aspect of any particular scene because it means that it's been going on long enough there to actually start to form its own identity.
Yeah, they've got their own heroes. They've got their elders that they can look up to and yeah. kind of go, these are the people that I want to emulate. And I can see their heroes. And their heroes are also South African. And I can see the people who their heroes got influence from. And they are maybe American. And then you can start to, when you're over there, kind of join the dots and really kind of see how the American music was influenced by African music and how African music was influenced by American music. And it's the one thing that I really feel fortunate going back to South Africa time and time again in playing is that I come, you know, being in England, I have a certain experience and I'll kind of receive and learn music in a certain way. And I kind of feel it's the duty of musicians to spread the education of how they learn music as far and wide as possible and also receive other people's stories and how you learn music.
Well, let's not forget that South African jazz has been on the world stage and influencing great musicians for a long time with Hugh Masekela and Abdullah Ibrahim, and they have always produced great musicians, and Miriam Makeba. So the heroes are not just local heroes.
Yeah.
They are international heroes, and that makes a big difference. And I know the next track that you've chosen features somebody who you see as a great potential superstar in the music, somebody who's really caught your ear, the pianist Bokani Dia.
Bokani's an amazing musician. It's like I was saying earlier, he just seems completely well-rounded as a musician. Technically, you can't fault him. Conceptually, he's got what he wants to bring to the music together. And it's played with a real kind of big energy, the thing that I really love about South African, you know, music. You hear it and it's like someone's got their arms open,
right,
bringing you into the music.
Right.
They're not smashing you on the head with it. They're not saying, this is inaccessible, you come to find me. They're saying, hey, we want you to be a part of this music with us.
Fanfare from pianist Bokani Dyer, representing the new wave of South African jazz musicians, and certainly into countrymen Bheki Mseleku and John Coltrane's music. That's from an album called Emancipate the Story. Well, it's apt that Bokani was one of your choices, as he was integral to your Blue Notes performance and brought a sense of authenticity to the band, who performed at the Claw Ballroom on November 15th at last year's London Jazz Festival. So, Shabaka, give us a background to the concert and how you put the band together and how the position of musical director came about.
Well, I've been researching the music of the Blue Notes for a while now, and it's all kind of, I guess, become more vigorous in all my trips to South Africa, just in seeing the context that they came from and the music. So I was asked by the London Jazz Festival to musical direct this program of music and choose the music that we perform.
Yeah.
So I really felt kind of really privileged to be able to do that. I wanted to get a group that really gave that element that the Blue Notes had of everything is under our belt at the same time, you know, a kind of sense of harmonic freedom, but not kind of forgetting where the harmonic freedom comes from. It comes from a place of knowledge, not a place of disregard.
Yes.
A sense of rhythmic freedom, but again, not coming from a place of we're just going to forget about rhythm. Mm. It comes from a place of we are in the rhythm. One of the things that I think is revolutionary about Louis Maholo's playing in the Blue Notes is the fact that it feels like he takes the rhythm and just elevates it into a place where you could have two simultaneous rhythmic patterns going on together. And the kind of momentum of those rhythmic kind of pulls, the pulsation, you know, is something that happens in traditional African music. It's kind of another thing connecting jazz to its African roots.
Yeah.
That sense of polyrhythm not being a division of a singular beat, but polyrhythm being various rhythmic structures being living in the same world.
Yeah.
And being completely content to be communal within the piece.
Yeah.
You know, the sense of African, you know, traditional African communality, you know, being introduced into music.
Yeah.
So with the band that I chose, I think I needed players that, one, understood these concepts, and two, could execute them in a way that wasn't trying to be someone else, that was true to their experience. Mark Sanders was obvious, because he's an incredible free jazz drummer playing with the likes of Evan Parker and John Butcher. Mm. But also, he has a very, very kind of strong sense of the jazz tradition and kind of inside playing. Soweto Kinch is just a monster alto player.
Absolutely.
Who can play anything, you know.
Yes.
Soweto can do it.
Yeah. And you had a wonderful trumpet player who I've admired for many years called Percy Persglove.
Yeah, I first played with Percy in Birmingham. We were in a big band together, the Midland Youth Jazz Orchestra, for maybe 3 years.
Right.
I was doing my A-levels and he was in the Birmingham Conservatoire.
Right.
So it was a real pleasure. You know, we did that group for many years, and then we kind of split ways. I went to London, he stayed in Birmingham.
Mm.
Coming back, kind of hearing him again many years later, it was just amazing to hear him. It felt like he's got the whole jazz kind of tradition under his belt, but also a kind of free sensibility. And he does play with a lot of the guys in the free scene, like Evan Parker. And I kind of thought, he's the guy that understands how all these kind of various elements of music work together.
And completing the band, you've got Carl Rashid Abel playing the acoustic bass.
Yeah, Carl's got that attitude, that I think the same kind of attitude as Johnny Deani. I'm a bass player, but I'm not going to restrict myself necessarily to the pre-appointed role that you might think that I should fulfill.
Sure. Well, thank you so much, Shabaka, for coming in and talking about this music and for describing the musician so beautifully.
And thanks for having me, Julian.
It's a pleasure. Well, let's get straight to the music now. Here are the Blue Notes, starting their set off with Blues for Moyaki. Ithi Gwi, played by the 2014 incarnation of the Blue Notes, recorded at last year's London Jazz Festival on the Jazz Lineup stage at the Southbank Centre. And for more information on all the tracks played on tonight's show, check out the playlist via the Radio 3 website. And my thanks to Shabaka Hutchings for sharing his enthusiasm and experiences with South African music. Well, that's almost the end of this week's Jazz Lineup, but there's plenty more jazz on BBC Radio 3 with Jeffrey Smith's Jazz tonight at midnight and Jazz on 3 on Monday night with Jez Nelson at 11. This week, Jez has music from American improvising heavyweights saxophonist John Diekman, bassist William Parker and drummer Hamid Drake, recorded in concert at London's Café Otto. And on next week's Jazz Lineup, Claire Martin will be celebrating two important jazz birthdays this month. Vocalist-composer Robert Wyatt's 70th and saxophonist Tubby Hayes' 80th. To sign off with tonight, an artist performing at a brand new festival taking place this month. It's the South Coast Jazz Festival, which runs from the 23rd to the 25th of January. And the festival features some great artists, including vocalist Leanne Carroll, the Mingus Underground Octet, and there's also a workshop called Jazz for Absolute Beginners, presented by our very own Kevin Legendre. Well, let's finish with another featured artist at the festival. It's tenor man Bobby Wellens, who plays on Saturday the 24th at the Rope Tackle Centre. Jazz Lineup will also be there recording his set. So, here is Bobby Wellens with Time, Gentlemen, Please. Till next time, from me, Julian Joseph, bye-bye.
Time, Gentlemen, Please, performed by Bobby Wellens, ending this week's Jazz Lineup. It was produced in Glasgow by Sushil K. Dade. And as Julian Joseph mentioned, the programme is back next week. It's at its usual time of 6 o'clock. You can find more information about the music in this week's programme via the BBC Radio 3 website. And as Julian mentioned, our next jazz appointment is in a couple of hours' time. Geoffrey Smith's Jazz, approaching, celebrating the music of Ornette Coleman as he approaches his 85th birthday. That's at 12 midnight tonight. In fact, it's birthdays everywhere you look.
Celebrating Simon Rattle on BBC Radio 3. 20 years ago, Simon Rattle conducted his first ever Beethoven symphony cycle with the orchestra that he led for 18 years, the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra. This year, Britain's most iconic conductor is 60. And to mark his birthday, Radio 3 is broadcasting those recordings for the first time. From the pioneering First Symphony through the drama of the Fifth to the joyous Ninth. Join me, Tom Service, for Simon Rattle's first ever recordings of the complete Beethoven Symphonies, beginning on Monday evening at 7:30 and continuing throughout the week, only on BBC Radio 3.
Yes, Monday itself is Rattle's actual birthday. You've probably left a little bit too late to post him a card, but you could always send him something through cyberspace. Here on BBC Radio 3, the day itself gets underway at 12:30 tomorrow night. That's Sunday night, Monday morning, with Through the Night with me, John Shea, when there'll be another chance to hear last summer's Proms performance of Bach's St. Matthew Passion, in which Rattle conducted the Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra and with Mark Padmore as the evangelist. That's tomorrow night at 12:30. This Saturday evening, it's now 10:03. High time for Here and Now with Ivan Hewitt.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition, which stretches across three generations of composers. At one extreme is a piece by a Californian composer approaching his 70s. At the other, music by Royal Northern College of Music students who are barely into their 20s. DDMMYY is an organisation founded by graduates of the Royal Northern College of Music, which, in their words, focuses on new ways of exploring and presenting contemporary acoustic and electronic music. We'll be finding out exactly how they do that later on when we hear from their co-founders, Jack Sheen and Tom Rose. And we begin today with brand new music from composer Lawrence Tompkins, two pieces, back to back, called Dear Dope and Meeting Point. They both make use of very interesting impure ensembles of standard instruments, rubbing shoulders with odd ones like keyboard-controlled samplers, played for preference through tinny, battery-operated speakers. The gap between normal and odd in these two pieces is narrowed by the fact that the standard instruments are made to sound peculiar, for instance by tuning the cello's bottom string way down. It's music deliberately designed to pin the listener's ears back, as the composer admits.
Both quite badly behaved pieces to open a concert, which kind of gradually becomes more and more placid and beautiful, I guess. Instrumentation-wise, it's your usual collection of strings and winds, but there's particular additions with a sampler, extra electronics tracks, and a DIY hammer on some wood with some sandpaper, and lots. There's a few surprises as well in terms of people kind of letting loose, but I won't spoil that too much. They're all unconducted, and they're coordinated by quite strange processes, so that lots of dense layers overlap in a way which might at first seem kind of loose and improvised, kind of scuzzy, but over time reveal themselves to be very well controlled indeed. The two titles come from, Meeting Point comes from a poem of the same name by Louis MacNeice, who's one of my favourite poets, and it kind of describes a point of time stopping still, so like almost between the ticking hands of a clock where it's kind of frozen in the middle, and that was kind of the image which I associate with the quality of the music. It doesn't really go anywhere per se, but it's kind of shifting around the whole time. Dear Dope comes from a lyric by a band called The Fall, and again it's a song called Mountain Energy, which describes this kind of in-between state in suitably elliptical lyrics, you might say.
Thank you.
Meeting Point, and before that, Dear Dope by Lawrence Tompkins, both pieces receiving their world premiere performances at the DDMMYY event we're featuring in tonight's programme. That somewhat strange title is the name of a concert series featuring an ever-changing ensemble from gig to gig. You can find full details of the players and instruments on the Here and Now pages of the Radio 3 website. The concert was given at the Royal Northern College of Music in Manchester last November, and the music was continuous, with no applause in between each piece. The next work we'll hear is by Larry Goves, a composer who's a well-known figure at the RNCM as he's taught composition there for a decade. Goves is a very self-conscious composer who never takes the assumptions of his own art for granted. This piece, entitled A Glimpse of the Sea and a Fold of the Hills, he describes as an exploration of the different ways a group of musicians can interact, both with each other and with a score. If that sounds dry, the music itself certainly isn't. In fact, it has a wistful folk-like quality, allied in an unsettling way to the kind of pointilliste sounds one might remember from old-style modern music of the 1950s. In a moment, Larry Goves himself will shed a bit more light on the piece. But first, let's hear a little more about the aims of DDMMYY from its co-founders Tom Rose and Jack Sheen.
I suppose the first thing to say is that it's not technically an ensemble. We treat it as a concert series, so it's really not about having a group of players and seeing how we can fit programs around it. It's very much more to do with thinking of solid pieces which fit together in a really meaningful and cohesive and interesting way, and then just making that happen whatever way we can, really. So
it started in 2012. It was just a group of composers, including Jack, myself, Laurie Tompkins, who's here, and Aaron Park, and people like that who are going to be featured throughout this series. So we basically, it was a way of taking control of the way that we put our music together in a live performance situation, and to draw in broader interests, to sort of make more of a sort of exact and maybe distilled kind of like aesthetic piece of work that didn't flit around in maybe the sort of concert situations that we, you know, you feel like you have to fit into sometimes. And it was just about making your own thing, focusing, honing in on stuff.
Thus far it's always been in Manchester because that's where we've been based, although now the people who are either heavily involved or slightly involved live as far and wide as Berlin and London and Manchester. I'm still here. So far we've only really done gigs in the RNCM, and we've got three more coming up in a gorgeous little space in the college, obviously this evening and then in February and April. But we've also done a couple of gigs in the bar called Sandbar, which is a kind of regular haunt that we all spend a lot of time in anyway. And those end up being really, really rewarding nights, sort of
you can only fit about 50 or 60 people really crammed into this small space and creating this really concentrated atmosphere where everyone's drawn into generally solo music and electronics. And then as kind of that music kind of dies down, everyone kind of zones out and you start to hear like the tinkling of beer glasses and stuff. For me, one of the most rewarding things so far has been commissioning works. Like, we've commissioned one from Laurie Tompkins, is obviously a really good friend of ours and a senior composer to us in college, I suppose. We've also commissioned a piece from Aaron Parker, and Tom and I have got new things coming up. But it's not just a case of asking someone for a piece and then getting it and performing on the day, partly because of the nature of the music and also the fact that the way the music works, it really feels like a sense of collaborating and kind of helping, not helping, that's the wrong word, but kind of DDMNY acting as a catalyst for other people's work that gets us really excited and kind of is constantly bringing new things into life. That's what I just hope we can continue, really.
It should hopefully be a bit rough around the edges still as well, because this, you know, it just started as a way that we could do things in a college environment and bring our friends along and get people along who maybe weren't going to other concerts, and then they will go to other concerts as well. It's just about, I don't know, keeping it a bit rough and ready.
My name is Larry Goves, and I've written the piece A Glimpse of the Sea and a Fold of the Hills. And it's a line from an R.S. Thomas poem that I really love. And I just thought that the line suited the flavour and the slightly pastoral sound in the music. The piece was commissioned by the French ensemble L'Instant Donné, and it's been performed by them and Zaffer and now DDMNY tonight. And that's interesting to me, because a lot of the concerns with this piece was kind of a punctuation mark in a line of inquiry, thinking about the way an ensemble interacts as a kind of part of the writing process. So in this piece you have lots of melodies, you have lots of pointillist kind of interactions between the instruments, and they keep breaking off into little duos and trios and playing music in unison, and then every now and again all coming together and playing. And the piece kind of culminates in a moment where all the acoustic instruments play both the line and this pointillist material together. And this is further confused by some pre-recorded instruments that are played out that sometimes blend with what's happening on stage, sometimes are very separate, and eventually are entirely separate and the whole thing is untangled. So I'm really grateful that DDMNYY are playing this piece and they're still interested in my music. Jack Sheen, who's conducting tonight, is a current fourth-year student of mine at the Royal Northern College of Music. And I've watched this group of great artists, composers, players. Quite a few of the composers involved have been students of mine here, kind of go on and move geographically around Europe and really maintain a strong trajectory in their writing and their interest in programming. So it's a real pleasure to be involved in it. Thank you.